Thank you very much for giving me time to share my ideas with the Japanese audiences and also our other international friends and colleagues here. Very recently, when I was coming towards Japan, and the day I received the visa, the next day I flew towards Japan. Maybe the Japanese embassy there was thinking that while Japanese cannot go because of security there, I can also not come. Maybe this was the situation. It was already delayed. But anyhow, it was a recent call about the situation and topic to talk about. So we will share our ideas from an Afghan perspective. If I start to talk about emerging conflict in the world, new conflicts in the world, of course, these conflicts we are studying in the world have many dimensions, can be social, political, economic, ideological, religious, many-sided. That's why they cannot be studied very abstract as they are emerged just now. So they must have some roots in the past as well. That's why we can say about the conflicts as general that conflict phenomena have been existed throughout the life of mankind in all historical periods. And these conflicts could be and were social, political, ideological, economic, religious, even related to have taken various forms in different historical periods. Or in other words, conflict phenomena have developed with the development of society from the very beginning up to now. So the same has happened to the world on the state levels. It means religious wars, colonial expansionism for economic reasons, ideological wars, and world wars for international hegemony, and so on. So the results of First and Second World War are known to everybody, and the phenomena emerge after or still play over the whole world, for example, superpowers in the institutionalization of peace in an organization, world organization, which is the United Nations organization. In the creation of two world blocs with contradictory economic political systems, which produced an era of the Cold War and ended only with the ending of the Soviet Union at the top in the world socialist system with its military and political blocs. At the end of the 20th century, of course. The end of the Cold War coincided with the defeat of the Soviet Union and the world socialist system, especially after their expansionist or aggressive war on Afghanistan, and which was going to be imposing their a communist state or a communist-oriented party as a state inside Afghanistan in the heart of Asia. And still, not only was Afghanistan was a target, so they wanted to come to the warm waters of Indian Ocean and have an eye on the energy resources of the Persian or Arab Gulf. So this is not only caused the dismemberment of the Soviet Empire, but it changed the geography of the region. As we see that the one federal state consisted of 16 or 15 republics, they divided into 15 different republics. Like Afghanistan was neighboring in the north before only with the Soviet Union. Now Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, three other countries are our northern neighbors, independent countries. So the end of the Cold War and the event followed caused the polarization of the world as well. That entered a new era of religious war and a war on international terrorism, as it is outspoken very much today. The world balance of power changed in favor of liberal states, and this worldwide reactions and interactions together with their effects world over can be the main subject of the study and research of the 21st century. Conflicts arise from the above situation as an introduction to enter to that, and some other resources which newly emerged, world conflicts can be counted according to that. We can enumerate them, in my view, very shortly, although it cannot be complete. As I said before, it is open for research and study for everybody and all the scholars in universities. So we can shorten it into two, three sectors or sections. Like, first, for example, the division of world from the economic point of view to the wealthy and poor nations, or as we heard before, to the north and south. This, in fact, two different worlds in our one world exist today, which is the wealthy world and the poor world. The majority of the third world countries and nations, they live in a lower than normal economic income. Like per capita incomes of the third world countries, if you go deep to that, it doesn't suffice for the normal daily life of a family there. This is a big source of crisis and conflicts today in a majority of the developing countries. Many states in Asia, in Africa, they are in the same situation now, and they are in the lack of technology. And as we see, for example, if we can even come to Kabul, and you see from the dawn until the sunset, the armies of these poor people are lining behind the Iranian embassy or the Pakistan embassy or XYZ embassy for getting visa to go to work there, to find something to eat there. So economic migration has increased too much these years, which creates itself a source of conflict. Second, the division of world from the political and ideological point of view. The distribution of world resources between highly developed industrial countries, it results in new formations like Shanghai Treaty Organization or Shanghai Treaty, which mainly unites Tehran, Moscow, and Beijing to each other. And it's a new threat in that area, especially for the presence of the whole Western community in the center of Asia, in that side of the world. And from the other side, new alliances of the previous Soviet independent states, now the so-called Commonwealth of Independent States. Also, they take support from outside, and Moscow never wants to turn or to make a U-turn, to see the U-turn of its previous Central Asian republics from Moscow towards the other countries or the Indian Ocean or Europe or Western Europe. Since the conflict of interests exists between different states, it can lead to insecurity in the world level as well. It shows new world alliances that contradict and oppose one another, in major world matters. For example, in energy, and also about the proliferation of nuclear weapons. The most known example is Iran. At the same time, emergence of fundamentalists, extremists, and terrorist groups in their organizations for carrying violent activities by using various tactics that roots in underdeveloped countries, poor and conservative societies. This can be considered the most dangerous source of conflicts, which receive contribution from narcotics, international, or drug mafia. It means that terrorists and drug mafia together creates the turmoil zones and everywhere to benefit from such institutions. No doubt it's a big permanent threat to the world security. As an Australian scholar, James Hallowell, in 2005, talking to a World Peace Conference, he rightly expresses that many of the conflicts in the world today are based on refusal to recognize, respond, and respect the needs of the other individuals, groups, or nations. From experiences witnessed, it is clear that uneven distribution of or allocation of socio-economic wealth of nations and the unequal political opportunity or participation of groups and individuals has resulted in the violent conflicts. So the third sphere of these conflicts, I can say the division of world from the cultural point of view. Division of the world from the cultural point of view. It means the war of civilization and globalization, in fact, is a war between the old and new, which can last for decades to come. It cannot finish very soon, of course. Religious conflicts and conflicts arising in the process of globalization are the serious challenges of the new millennium, and that could last decades. Mainly because the difference and gap between the countries are various and very big, that requires a long time to be dealt with. For example, economically backward countries are culturally in different positions for accepting globalizations easily. And as a consequence, resisting against globalization. They are resisting because of religious propagandas, especially when the difference between cultures exists. Religious propaganda, from the fundamentalist point of view, it penetrates much more in such societies than, of course, in a highly developed and educated society, in cultural society, civilized societies. So emerging conflicts in the world can be studied in every individual state separately, according to their own subjective and objective conditions. And also, we can study them in a region, and also we can see them worldwide, internationally. In any level, if they emerge, their effects can be two-sided of all conflicts. They can be negative, they can be positive. We can see the, if to to generalize the experience, studying in the whole world or different parts of the world, we can generalize them and say that the negative effects of the conflicts include what? They include loss of lives and property, underdevelopment and worsened poverty, lawless and banditry, massive internal displacements, precipitate refugee institutions, violence of various kinds and categories, deterioration of living standards, collapse of moral standards, spread of disease, particularly sexually transmitted diseases, acute food shortages, breakdown in law and order, interruption in social functions, and so on. They are the very negative effects of conflicts exist. A positive effect of conflicts, which we can study in my country as well, I can tell you the examples, in the same like countries like Afghanistan. So one can talk about the post-conflict societies, the introduction of post-conflict handling mechanisms as a positive result of conflicts. Though different according to each country's specific historical, socio-political, economic, traditional, cultural, religious, and other conditions, example of these are institutions like transitional justice, and reconciliation commissions, peace jirgas like especially for Afghanistan. So efforts like judicial reform, to which Professor Kenji pointed in the first introduction of him, strengthening the rule of law in good governance in order to apply social justice, it is indeed contributing towards the relative satisfaction of the victims of the conflict and paves the way towards establishing peace in such societies, although gradually. Conflict also brings about security alertness, democracy, political consciousness, promoting tolerance and reconciliation among perpetrators of atrocities and victims of abuse, promoting national consciousness and socio-economic development, enhancing cultural homogeneity and raising awareness on the possible causes of conflict, and further creating strategies that will enhance, strengthen, and consolidate the fragile peace. All the above-mentioned positive aspects of the conflict can be the same everywhere, but they only differ according to the different conditions and situations exist in each country and region of the world. The time limits for these effects also differ for the same reasons. It means it can be positive, can be seen these positive effects in one country in a shorter period of time, in another country in a longer period of time, according to the reasons we told about before. So in the case of Afghanistan, I'll come now to Afghanistan shortly and then see what we can deduct from that. In the case of Afghanistan, the visible internal and international conflicts in Afghanistan, it started from the coup d'etat of 1973, in which a cousin of a king and brother of law of him, Mr. Daoud Khan, made a white coup d'etat while the king was for a treatment in Rome, and he changed the 400 years existed kingdom into a republic and announced the republic. Of course, the military was with him, although it was a white coup d'etat, the military was with him, who were educated in Moscow or in previous Soviet Union. So it means the design has been dictated for him from abroad, although he was saying that it was his own initiative. He finished the kingdom. But himself was also finished by the same coup d'etat of the same people in 1978. So that was the introduction to the communist coup d'etat of 1978. So this changed and made visible to the people of the region, the Afghan people, and also changed the world as a whole as we see it now. So it was not only internal factors involved in it, but external factors for the first time after the 1947, which British has left the area, Indian subcontinent, it was a division of India. It was the first visible strong factor to bring changes in this area, especially in the center of the Asia, in the heart of Asia, and in Afghanistan, which continues until now. So we can say that in April 1992, which take over the power by the Afghan Mujahideen, that soon after began fighting for political power between themselves. They marked, it marks these years, the start of the civil war in Afghanistan, which didn't exist before, after April 1992. And in that civil war, of course, the reasons are ethnic reasons, language reasons, religion reasons, and there are many ethnics. They receive the help for this power struggle from abroad, still from abroad. No Afghan neighbor, not in the west, not in the east, not in the north, not in the south. They are not looking peacefully towards this country. So all of them, they have to continue from their point of view, their national interests, if they, in this case, as a consequence, if a foreign country seeks their national interests in the turmoil in another country, it's a permanent source of conflict. So that's why, as a result, they could export to Afghanistan the religious terrorists as well, the extremists and fundamentalists as well, which gave rise to the power of the Taliban. Taliban means religious students. Especially religious students must not fight. In our Islam, and also in our culture, normal students can fight, but the religious students must not fight with gun, because they are religious. They must think about God. They must think about prayings. They must think sacredly about human beings, even according to Islam. But these Taliban religious students, they can use rockets, they can use guns, they can repair them, they can use planes, they can strategically go and fight like guerrillas. Until now, they took power in September 1996 and ousted all 7-8 groups from power and sent them to the Kolyab of Tajikistan. Until 9/11 September 2001 happened. So, of course, we can say, and the United States of America also confesses it, they cannot deny it. The CIA reports on the books, Unholy Wars, printed in 2000, it says that they gathered against the Red Army, against the Soviet Union, all the terrorists of the world, and brought them to Afghanistan, and brought them to Pakistan, in order to train the Afghan Mujahideens to fight the Red Army. So the question arises, why when the Russians went from Afghanistan, why these all terrorists were not taken back to their home countries and left for Afghanistan? What for? In Afghanistan, in a situation, a land without leader. And these terrorists were the leaders without land. So it was a paradise for them. So we don't go for these causes, that what are the causes of 9/11 and so and so. But anyhow, if we relate the Afghanistan question to that and come to the conclusion, we can say that conflicts in Afghanistan at present have connection and are interrelated to those of the previous years that up to this moment exist and have not been solved for the sake of peace. Although causes and factors, forces and players, internally and externally, were and are different in each period Or, in other words, internal and external factors of conflicts in Afghanistan can be studied according to the existing realities inside that country just now. It needs more research. So, to finalize or to conclude, as a proposal to the international community, as even since 2002, I'm in Kabul, and every year the Faculty of Law and Political Sciences of Kabul University celebrate the day of the United Nations, establishing the United Nations organization, and all the United Nations officers are present there, including the ambassador of the United Nations to Afghanistan, and we have raised this question. And once more, I say today, again, it is especially the developed countries for the, and this proposal goes especially to developed countries and the great powers of the world. I want to attract the attention of all to be serious about the phenomena of conflicts in this global village for the sake of world peace and security. Whatever the mechanism is going to be employed for this purpose, it will be necessary to act through United Nations organization as a world institution which must practically turn to a center of harmonization and coordination the activities of all states according to the charter. And for this end, if necessary, review the charter and overhaul the organization, taking into account the existing realities of the international community, and on the top, the international declaration of the human rights and its related covenants. And want also to pay the attention of the whole world to their own General Assembly decision on the principles of international law in 1971, which they agreed that for the friendly relations between nations and states, we accepted these principles. Which were these principles and why they are not respected? First of all, non-threat or use of force in international relations. Secondly, peaceful settlement of international disputes. Thirdly, non-intervention in the internal affairs of the other states. Fourthly, respect for sovereignty and sovereign equality of other states. Number five, respect for the right of self-determination of nations. Principle number six, the obligation of cooperation with other states. So, according to that, only to respect these principles of international law, the principles existed in the Charter of the United Nations, the purposes for which the United Nations has been created, to which percentage it has been respected until now, since 1945. How much and to which percentage the cooperation of the United Nations has been extended to the developing countries? How many percentage of the, we can see, of the developing countries are standing on their own feet? Has this organization fulfilled its tasks or not? That's why I want a new approach to that, a new approach or review of the charter, and the membership and the members, actors in the organization. If we do this, and if we obey to these principles that the states themselves has agreed on it, I think it will ensure the world peace for the future human being in this society. Let's pray for that and strive for that. Thank you very much.